The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I'm Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame, Dan Gable Museum, along with Andy Cattle Congress Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com. How are you, Andrew? Ready for postseason?
I am ready for postseason.
You're in it.
I'm not just ready yet. We're in the middle of it.
You've done it. You went to the Big Tens, the premier Division I college wrestling postseason tournament other than the Nationals. There's no question about that.
It was a pretty good tournament.
It used to be the Big 12 or Big 8 for a while. That was the tournament when Oklahoma was good, Oklahoma State was good, Iowa State was good, Nebraska was good. They're still good, but they were in the Big 8, and then Missouri was not good, but you had the Big 4. That was the toughest tournament, even with five teams for a while. Now it's Big 10 by far.
Yeah. I remember the first few years I went to the Big Ten Championships, there'd be like 3,000 people in the stands for the finals, 3,000, 4,000 people for the finals. There were 14,000 pretty much for every session up there in Minneapolis. It was incredible. I've never seen a crowd like that for the Big Ten Championships.
Isn't that mind-blowing when you think about 14,000 for the Big Tens and how popular that tournament has become? And I don't know that adding the additional teams is the reason why. I just think that you've had Penn State, you have Iowa, Minnesota's a good draw, and it's in the Twin Cities. Ohio State is a power. All of the teams that are pushing the envelope for national championship trophies, it's pretty much Big Ten outside of Oklahoma State at this point. Michigan, don't want to leave them out either. Just you have that core group that is absolutely competing for those four trophy spots. And there's not another team or two. There's not two other teams within a conference at this point that you can actually say, yep, they're probably competing for a trophy. It's Big Ten with multiple. And then you have Oklahoma State, Cornell's in the mix, Missouri's in the mix, but there's not another team in their conference. I mean, I guess you could say Lehigh and Cornell, but they're not pushing for trophies at this point. So it's Big Ten or bust. It's the premier conference, no doubt about it.
Well, and I think the attendance in Minneapolis is an extension of what we're seeing on college campuses across the country for dual meets. It's just on the move upward, and to think that we have tripled our attendance for the Big Ten Championship over the course of the last 15, 16, 17 years or so is pretty incredible.
How much do you think the Big Ten Network plays into that?
I think there are a lot of factors. I think there are a ton of factors. That's one of them. Certainly, we're seeing ticket demand for the NCAA Championships probably like never before, and television exposure for the NCAA Championships like never before, and just the exposure the sport's getting now that it didn't have 20 years ago is unbelievable. We've talked about this before on previous episodes, just how it was a big deal. You know, our guest today is Adam Tiripelli, NCAA champion in 2001. And if I'm not mistaken, that might have been the first year that we had live television for the finals.
Was that the year that they...
Or maybe it was tape delay. Actually, it might have been tape delay. But right around in there, it was a big deal when we got the finals broadcast on maybe ESPN2 in their entirety.
And they, for a while, they did it in the afternoon.
Yeah. Remember when they the finals that day were in the afternoon.
Yeah. So 01, they started doing live broadcast, and that, remember they did the consolation round at 8 in the morning.
Wow.
Yeah. And then they had to turn around within 4 hours and get that going. I think it might've been a noon finals or 2 o'clock. I don't know what it was, but it was something that was really early. And I think there was some complaints about that, of course. But anytime you can be live on TV, you have to take it, no matter what the time is.
Well, I think the exposure the sport's getting now and being brought into living rooms where it never had been before is a big deal for wrestling. And certainly there are a lot more different ways to reach fans than ever before. Social media has been tremendous. The exposure the sport's getting on the internet, live streaming, it's been huge. So we're in a good place in terms of exposure right now. And hopefully there's nothing that, takes it out of wrestling's control. And by that, I mean, you know, certain things with the NCAA always evolving and a lot of this talk about, athletes being paid, that could potentially be, I don't want to say catastrophic, but that wouldn't be good for Olympic sports. But I think we're on a good path right now, at least, on the things that we can control as a sport in a lot of them. There's certain things that can be tweaked and worked out. And I think there are a lot of people that are pushing the envelope a little bit to try to make sure we evolve as a sport.
I think Adam Tirapelli, our guest, as you mentioned, will have good insight on that. I first became aware of how bright and intelligent he is when you suggested him to me. And I think within a couple of weeks, I was giving him a call to find out more. And what you had said was exactly true. So he has a unique take. And I think he's going to add a lot to what we get to do in breaking down the 2019 championships and then some. I think he's going to go beyond just talking about X's and O's of the 2019 championships, but has a great mind. He's an assistant coach at Clovis, a powerhouse out of California. As you said, an NCAA champion, 3-time All-American. Excited to hear what he has to say about the championship season.
Yeah, one of the brightest minds in the sport, as far as I'm concerned. And go back to 18 years ago when he was getting ready to wrestle for an NCAA title. And I was at the Iowa City Press Citizen at the time. We were doing the tournament was in Iowa City in Carver Hawkeye Arena. And we were doing a lot of preview stories on wrestlers from around the country to kind of brush fans up on some of the other guys that are going to be competing for national titles. And I called Adam up and we talked for about 15, 20 minutes for the interview. And about an hour later, we got off the phone after we just spent like an hour talking from a fan standpoint. And I thought, man, he's got some tremendous ideas, incredible insight on what's going on around the country. And just one of my favorite people to talk to about wrestling.
We'll have him on in a few minutes. We have a few more things that we want to break down, including a few mailbag items. And I'd call them live mailbag items because two people that are listeners to the show all the time came up to me at the Division III National Championships in Roanoke. That is Scott Honecker and Mike Derone. Honecker is at Williams. Derone is at Wisconsin Parkside. And I think I got that right because I started an interview with him.
Wisconsin Platteville.
Platteville. And I did that. I made that mistake, actually. I said Parkside. And he said, we got to stop and go to Platteville. So I made the mistake twice. So hopefully the
three
third
times.
Times
now.
Yeah. No, it's three times. So Platteville. I got it right. And surprisingly, they flew out of Cedar Rapids. And he surprised me in saying that it was only an hour 20 from Cedar Rapids to Platteville. So I learned quite a bit there, but he has an interview on track wrestling. I appreciate him listening and his take. He's with us on PDI and cumulative scoring. So anyone that wants to be on that frame of mind is friends with us. It's not necessarily why we'll be friends. He's a good guy, but I like that he thinks that way.
Yeah. And weren't you saying that just kind of studying the geography here that you might have to be pushing the throttle a little bit to make it from Platteville to Cedar Rapids?
I think
in an hour and 20 minutes.
I think he's probably speeding because I did my research and it showed about 137 because some Dubuque people were on our flight and they said, there's no way, dude. They said, it takes us an hour and a half. How is it possible for you, which is 20 miles further, to actually get there in an hour 20? So I'd like to know what Mike Derone, how fast he's pushing that. I really would. I want to see how fast he's going. That I'm guessing if you're doing it, you've got to be in the mid 80s to get there in an hour 20 to the Cedar Rapids Airport.
Let's try it sometime.
Yeah.
Let's see how fast we can make that drive.
Or we can just take a ride with him and see if he'll do it, and then he can get the speeding ticket for us. Scott Honecker brought something to my attention that I was unaware of. I 100% guarantee you know this. I know you know this, but I did not know this, and it pertains to riding time. I did not know that when you look at the riding time clock, when it goes up or down, that the colon in the middle, if it's green or red, that indicates which wrestler has the riding time. I didn't know until Scott Honecker told me. And I don't know if other people knew that, but I did not know that.
Learn something every day, Kyle.
I did. What a cool thing to learn. So if you're watching the NCAA championships and you're wondering who has the writing time, look at that colon in the middle of the writing time. If it's red, it's the red wrestler. If it's green, it's the green wrestler. And then I just wanted to do my public service and add a couple things. If you did not know this, if you're driving down the highway and you look at where it says the exit, if it's on the right hand side or the left hand side of the sign up above, that means which side of the road the exit is. So if it's on the right hand side, you go to the right exit. If it's on the left-hand side, it's the left. And then the other thing my dad taught me early on, and I want to make sure people know this. So when they say, who's the home team? So if it says Augsburg versus Wartburg, the team that's last, and this is the United States, is the home team. I don't know if people knew that too. So I'm just doing my public service right now. Colon, Augsburg versus Wartburg, that means it's at Wartburg. And then on the exit signs, if it's on the right-hand side, it means it's a right-hand exit. If it's left-hand, it's left exit. I know you knew all this, but I just wanted to inform people because I did not know these things at some point in my life.
Well, that's good. It's certainly interesting that we've swerved the car in this direction all of a sudden. How about Cattle Congress? That was kind of random out of the beginning. What was that from? We were watching Wheel of Fortune over here the other night.
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Something like Livestock Show is one of the...
Oh, yeah. It was Livestock
one of the
Show.
One of the answers.
Yeah. And I think you'd asked me if I'd been to a livestock show. I think that's where it came from.
And you have.
I have been to one. I am not adept at what goes on with them. I don't know if they really judge the cattle. Is that what they do? I don't know what happens.
Sure.
Is that what they... So what are they... What's their criteria to judge a cow?
They're looking for body composition, like structure.
Okay.
Lots of different things.
Sort of like a dog show?
Similar, probably.
Okay.
I don't know what they're looking for in a dog show, but yeah.
Okay.
Let's go down to the Governor's Charity Steer Show next year, Kyle.
Well,
Brett Metcalf showed in it last year. Ryan Morningstar, I think, the year before.
Okay. Well, Jim Miller.
Wrestling ties.
Who we were out at the Division III championships, legendary coach for Wartburg, 10 NCAA championships. He was in this once, and he has a video where he was getting absolutely kicked around by a bull. And I'd like to get that video somewhere. I don't know if we can get that on Facebook somewhere, but it's pretty comical because that bull was having his way with Jim. There was nothing he could do about it. I think he was like a celebrity judge, or he was out there trying to do something. It is hysterical. So we'll do our best to be able to get that video. I don't know if he still has it or if he wanted to make sure that got deleted, but there's very much truth. You mess with the bull, you get the horns. Bulls are a strong, strong animal.
Alex Marinelli.
He's a strong, strong
dude. Fits him well, right?
Absolutely, it does. And we will break down his run to a possible NCAA championship because he has an insane draw that might include a returning two-time All-American and Joe Smith, who has the number 33 seed. Pretty amazing what his run might look like. If he goes according to seed, he's got a lot of firepower there, but I think he's a guy that embraces it. That's why he has the nickname the Bull.
Yep. Bull in a China shop.
Yeah.
He's looking pretty good. He had a heck of a performance up in Williams Arena. Pretty convincing win in the finals over Vincenzo Joseph. Yeah. Alex Marinelli's looking strong. You mentioned that path, potential first round bout with Joe Smith, Jonathan Virouette, round two potentially, the guy that took him to overtime at the Midlands, potential quarter against junior world champ Makai Lewis, who beat him last spring up at the junior world team trials. Then potentially round four with Evan Wick. So a lot of work to be done.
I don't think anyone likes drawing Evan Wick. I just think he's a nightmare. Just the way he wrestles, he's long, has that length. He's just tough to wrestle.
And let's not forget Marsteller down there too as the five.
Yeah.
So
he's a tough dude too. We'll break down more of the NCAA championships coming up with Adam Tirapelli. Want to break down a little bit of the D3s and D2s. I think it's fair to say St. Cloud State is now a Division II powerhouse, don't you?
Yeah, four out of five.
I think they're there.
Yeah, pretty incredible. And especially you look at what happens at the Division I level, and it's almost impossible nowadays to win the title without having an individual champion. I mean, Iowa did it in 2009, but St. Cloud State now has the last 2 years won the D2 national title without a champion.
Pretty amazing how that works, how you can have that. Now the Division III side, you're talking about a dominating performance, almost doubled the output of Loras. Loras, runner up, first trophy in program history, got a second place trophy. They did not have a finalist. Augsburg had four finalists and they had four champions. They ran away with 130 points to 66 for Loras. Man, Augsburg's good. And I don't see them slowing down. I think they might lose one person off the lineup for next year. So I think it's going to be Augsburg's for the next few years. Wartburg didn't have the tournament they wanted, but they still have firepower back. Loras has a lot back. So I think the Division III product, D2, I think these are tournaments and these are championships you want to check into. I think they're fantastic products, and I think the wrestling is just outstanding from an entertainment point of view. I wouldn't miss these. I think it's so much fun. I think you even said that because I had the chance to go out to the D3s. I think you were a little jealous. I think you were saying, I wish I was going out. So there must be a reason that you want to see the D3s, unless it's just to go to Roanoke.
Well, I wanted to go to Roanoke. Okay. I wanted to see Virginia. Okay. But also, I went to D3s a year ago, and it was bonkers right from the start. I think three number one seeds got knocked off in the first 45 minutes of the tournament.
Yeah.
So there was some wild stuff that happened. A lot of returning champs. Like the two finalists at 33 a year ago, neither one of them placed.
Yeah.
Just really weird stuff right from the beginning, and that's what makes it a lot of fun. But yeah. Really intrigued to see what happens with Wartburg, how strong they bounce back from this, because this is foreign territory for them to fall down to sixth, and especially a team that was ranked number one coming in. You know that's not sitting well with them. And is it a deal where we see a lot of teams having hope now? You know, Loras jumping up there. They're on the rise. Jim Miller's son, TJ, running the show over there. They're doing a great job. Do they get themselves into title contention? Does Wartburg come back guns blazing and, you know, prove that this is just a blip on the radar? I think a lot of interesting storylines there.
I think it's a somewhat of a blip on the radar, although I think Augsburg is going to win it next year. I still think Wartburg.
You think so?
I think Augsburg is. Absolutely. Yeah.
Just even though what we just talked about, all the returning champs going down?
I think they have enough firepower coming back.
It's weird that the same two schools have won it every year for what now? How many? Like you got to go back to the mid 90s, right?
95.
And yet,
25 years. Yep.
It's so unpredictable.
Yeah.
It's so predictable on the team front and yet so unpredictable on the individual
on everything
front.
Else. But, yeah.
We'll see. It should be fun.
Well, you're right. I mean, since 1984, this is the first time since 84 that a school from the Iowa Conference or the, what is it, Twin Rivers or American Rivers Conference now that used to be the Iowa Conference, which I'm not super happy about, but it's the American Rivers Conference, formerly known as the Iowa Intercollegiate Athletic Conference, IIAC. First time since 84 that there was not a finalist from that conference.
Crazy.
So the unpredictability that you're talking about is absolutely front and center. But I think Wartburg, I think it was a little bit of an aberration. You have Brock Rathman, a returning NCAA champion, get pinned twice. Can't predict that. That's tough to predict. He's going to be back. And so let's just say he has some sort of success and is an All-American where he should be. I think he was the 3 seed. They're ahead of Loras. You have one guy dictate that much. And so I think Wartburg's going to be fine. I think people probably panic a little bit too early.
Yeah.
Wartburg has a great base. They're a good team. They have a championship tradition. They have a great coach in Eric Keller. So I think Wartburg's going to be fine. What I'm more concerned about was I thought Roanoke was fantastic. I thought the venue was fantastic. I thought the energy was. I wasn't sure what Roanoke would be like with it being that far away from where your base is for Division III, but I thought it was very well attended given what D3 traditionally gets. My only concern was the men's bathrooms.
Okay.
It was rough, man. It really was. How in 2019 you don't realize that you should have doors on the stalls is beyond me. I was absolutely embarrassed going into the base level, going to the men's, and there you have a urinal and you have your traditional toilet and there is no door in there. And it's just this broken down wooden base. And it's just, you have that there, but there was no door in it. How you wouldn't have that type of awareness to realize that a man in his toilet, that's a very intimate time, and you need to really treat that with the privacy it deserves. How in 2019 you don't have a door on the stall? That's my only critique of that arena, that venue. Other than that, the town was beautiful. Where we were set up was absolutely fantastic. It was like a castle where we got to stay. Roanoke is a beautiful place. I thought Fearham did a fantastic job. It's just more in the venue. How you have urinals are okay, but the actual toilets were an abomination.
You never know where this show's going to go. And talking about toilets is something that I did not expect coming into today.
But we went there.
Yep.
Who thought that we would be talking about colons on the writing time? When did you know about that? Right away? Did you have that figured out?
I don't know. I don't know the exact moment.
Okay.
It wasn't like a revelation to me, and all of a sudden like my life changed, but
I'm guessing
several
working,
years ago.
I'm guessing working with track, you'd probably have to have that in your arsenal of knowledge that's how that works. Now, this wasn't a critique, but Scott Beck, who we've had on the show, and he always chimes in with great insight, and I always appreciate what he has to say about the show. He had a comment. He said, what are you guys going to do to continue on your string? Here's our 2019 guest list. Okay. Starting backwards. We had Nate Carr, Kevin Jackson, John Smith, Tony Roby, Kerry Collott, Keith Gavin, Austin Blythe, the football player who plays for the Los Angeles Rams, Tom Brands, Bob Bowlesby, commissioner of the Big 12, and Brandon Egham started out the year. And then we're going to have Adam Tirapelli. We're on a roll.
Oh yeah.
We have a great guest list, and I'm not fearful of it. I just think we're going to keep this momentum going forever. This ain't going to stop. We're going to have great guests all the time. That's going to be fun. We actually have some new segments we're going to unveil here in the coming weeks. We're going to have a Casper's Corner coming up live at the NCAA Championship. So keep tuning in on that. We have some ideas to continue to advance the show. So keep
listening. And anybody out there that has some ideas for us, new segments they'd like to see, fire away.
We want them. What do you say we go all the way out to California and let's talk with Adam? Let's bring in our guest for today. Our guest is going to help us break down and preview the 2019 NCAA Division I Championship brackets. He has a colorful history, three-time All-American. Get this, Andy. He has every place that's important. He got third place, lost in the semis, came back and won two matches. Reached the finals and got second and won an NCAA championship for Illinois in 2001. Now he's an assistant coach for his former high school at Clovis in California. It is Adam Tirapelli. How are you, Adam?
Good. Good. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you on. We were just breaking this down, and I think the last time you were on the show, we made mention of this, but it's such an interesting tidbit that in 1999, you're wrestling for Illinois, you get third place, but all the guys around you, fourth, first, second, all came from the same area, and TJ Williams goes to Iowa from Illinois. You have Tony Davis goes to Northern Iowa from Illinois. Reggie Wright goes to Oklahoma State from Illinois. You're from California, go to Illinois. Was it weird when that happened that you had that kind of circle of four right there?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. Obviously, my buddies in college, of course, you know, had legendary stories about Tony Davis and TJ Williams and Reggie and those guys. So I only knew them from afar, but it just kind of worked out where I ended up there. And obviously, they took their own path. TJ and Tony, I think, went junior college first, and maybe even Reggie too. And then, you know, all the great universities, and then ended up wrestling each other. So
it was a little different, if I remember right, that they didn't have brackets released this early. Do you remember when you were competing at college when they released the brackets?
I think they came out Monday. I want to say it was Monday, week of the tournament. Monday or Tuesday is when they came out, I believe.
As an athlete, how do you compartmentalize the brackets? Are you breaking them down? Are you looking at who's where and where you are? Is that something you do as an athlete?
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody, you know, I mean, you can say what you want. I mean, I think all the wrestlers know, you know, kind of where they're at. I mean, it would be foolish at least to not know, you know, which guys you need to prepare for. I mean, I will tell you, Division I level, everybody knows this, like, you can't expect to have anybody in the second round. Like, and it's gotten way tougher, I would say, even than when I wrestled. Obviously, they seed all the way to 33 now. When I wrestled, they seeded at 12, I believe. So you prepare for the first guy and you're ready to go. And then you know who may potentially be in your way. But, you know, I think they all kind of have an idea because matchups do matter. I mean, we learned this in any combat sport, like styles do make fights and matchups matter. So, they have to know who they're preparing for.
Adam, how much do guys get wrapped up in seeds as whether, feeling disrespected or I should be here or he should be there?
I don't think that much, really. I think that the exception really comes, and we have a couple of them this year. Typically in any year, you may not have any. But this year we have a couple where there's really one guy who's so much better than the field. And so then you get guys that are, that are hoping to make the NCAA finals and of course give it a shot. But, like with Nolf and with Nickel, I think are two of the examples, nobody wants the four. They wanted three or five. They wanted three or six or seven or two. And the same thing at 97. And we saw some interesting seating there. I don't know how it all goes down, but, I would say that's the only case. And there's maybe two of those this year. Most of the weights are, there's plenty of guys that can win it. You're going to have to go through great guys, to make the finals to win the championship. So I don't think they get wrapped up in seeding that much. And even then, I know Pantelo said something about the seeding, but he'll make that comment now. And then, it is what it is. And you get ready to wrestle.
Take what you had in 2001. So not that you necessarily get wrapped in the seedings, but do you get wrapped up into what happens? So Mike Zadek has this huge upset. It's maybe as loud as I've heard Carver Hawkeye in 01 beats Reggie Wright, the number one seed. Does that do anything to you when you hear that result and you know that Reggie Wright's out of the championship side of the bracket?
No, I'm a fan. I've always been a fan of the sport. I think some guys are more fans than others. Some just love wrestling and then go into their own little world. I was always more of a fan than, and an athlete. So, it's hard to ignore, but I was on the bottom side and he's on the top side and I'd wrestled Reggie. So it's just an interesting, it's just more like, hey, this is a tournament. You got to be prepared. Not so much that, hey, I won't have to wrestle this guy now. Because at that point I had another, three or four matches to go, including somebody who beat me the previous week. So, it's not really you're planning for the end. It's just, a wake up call that, hey, got to be ready to go every match. And I think everybody who's been there knows that. But, it is a unique tournament. I'll never forget when Kerry Collette said it's the toughest tournament. He's wrestled everything. He says it's the toughest tournament he's ever had to wrestle.
Taking what you just said about seeding, this is the first year that we're seeding out all the way to 33. What are your thoughts on that?
So they're using an objective, mostly objective format. They call it matrix C for seeding. So, in their mind, hey, if we're going to 16 and we're doing it objectively, why not go all the way out to 33? I don't think it necessarily helps or hurts. When you get past 16, 17 to 33, you're going to get a lot of parity and a lot of little things deciding seed differences. But I don't know. I don't think it hurts. It's different. And it actually makes it harder to find the seeds because everybody's got a name next to their, or a number next to their name. But other than that, I'm not sure it's going to matter.
Let's start with the obvious 165 pounds, Alex Marinelli, the top seed, but has a unique draw, one that I think will go down possibly in history that we'll remember, and that Joe Smith is seeded 33 because he hasn't competed at 165 pounds. So the formula puts him in that situation where he's not seeded, a two-time returning All-American, likely going to fit in there against Marinelli. And then Marinelli has a gauntlet in trying to be an NCAA champion. Just take us through when you see that on the surface, what your thoughts were at 165.
It just tells you that it is truly objective. I think you got to go one way or the other. You either have some subjectivity or you don't. And, everybody knows the rules going into it. I know people are up in arms about Joe being 33. He's obviously not the 33rd best guy in the weight class, but if you have an objective criteria, and that's what they've chosen to do, whoever the powers that be have chosen, that's the way they want to go, then by that, he is the 33rd guy. I mean, it makes it tough on Marinelli. It's not really fair to him with the season he's had. Knowing Marinelli, I doubt he's really worried about it. Probably thinks he's going to beat them all anyway, but it does make for, makes for an interesting first round matchup.
What weight bracket intrigued you the most?
Well, everybody talked about 33 all year, just because there's so many good kids. And I think that one is anytime you don't have a for sure winner or a for sure standout and you get so many great wrestlers, so many things that can happen. I think that's been kind of when everybody's followed all year. And that's probably the one that, that I look at the most. But there's great wrestlers in every weight class. It's been fun to watch. The only ones that, they're great for wrestling because it's fun to watch Nolf and it's fun to watch Nickel, as great as they've been, but it's not as exciting from a fan standpoint because there's a little bit less intrigue. I mean, anything can happen, but those guys losing would be a pretty big upset.
What do you think at 133? It has been the bracket everyone's talking about. Dayton Fix is the top seed, and then you just go down the line, and it's just absolutely deep from top to bottom. Who survives this gauntlet?
Well, I mean, Meech has been pretty good. Obviously he's had some injuries and he didn't wrestle. I'm sure he wasn't extremely injured, at the Big Ten, but with the way things are set up, and we've had this discussion a little bit online, there's no real punishment for medically forfeiting out. So people do it because, they get it. It's, you understand the rules of the game and then you play the game. So the rules say this isn't going to hurt me that much. I still think I can win it. So I'm not going to risk it. But I think he'll be ready to go. And he's got to be one of the favorites. And Fix has been great. I mean, Fix is good in all positions. And I think that might give him an advantage in the end. I mean, he's a good rider, great athlete, can go really hard. Definitely has earned the number one seed. But there's a lot of guys. I think it's more, we used to always say, it's more, there's maybe only a handful of guys typically that can win a weight class. But the more guys that can beat the number one seed, the crazier the weight class gets, right? So if you got eight guys that could possibly beat the number one seed, I mean, that's good, but you look at 33, I mean, you can't tell me that the 13 seed can't beat the number one seed. I mean, he can, all the way down. So you're getting a lot of, and that's Gomez from Iowa State. I mean, you get a lot of kids who can all beat each other. I don't necessarily think guys in the 10 through 16 range, we'll end up on the top of the podium, but they have the ability to beat a guy in one match. And that's where you get the crazy results.
Adam, what's the solution to this medical forfeit situation? What do you see? What could curb this?
So, I mean, I'm a big proponent of making the whole season matter. I mean, I think that's how you put fans in seats and that's how you bring in revenue. It's how you grow the sport. I think we've done a good job with that, with, the regular season mattering for qualifying, and that's, dual meet attendance is up. I mean, I was just talking to my brother this morning at Stanford, and I was asking him, I go, hey, do you remember how many people were in the stands when we wrestled at the Big Ten tournament? And we both were kind of, laughing. We're like, yeah, not a lot. And then you look at Minnesota last week and the place is absolutely packed for every session. I mean, wrestling has grown a lot, but if we want to continue its growth, like, we have to make these things matter. We can't show up at the conference tournament and have a ton of forfeits because people know they've qualified. It's not going to hurt their seed. They're saving themselves. They're going to wait for nationals. That's the old, one big event strategy. We have one great event and that's all we're going to keep, and we don't care about anything else. So my thing is, I don't know why for sure at a minimum they don't make, once you get to the conference tournament, every contested match counts as a win or a loss and head to head. So, you get every person under the sun coming out with every reason why a guy could possibly not wrestle. And it's true. And there's lots of reasons why you might not wrestle. But the truth is, those are outliers. The main reason guys aren't wrestling is because they're banged up and they've already secured a good position in the weight class, in the bracket, in the seeds for the following week. And they don't want to risk it. I mean, Miocic could have wrestled Fletcher. He beat him good the first time. So instead, he chooses not to. He's still the 2 seed. Fletcher is, what, the 5? And Fletcher has no opportunity to redeem him. I mean, there's no opportunity to beat him. So you take that away, and so Miocic says that this year, people learn from that, and they go, well, you know, DeSantos should have forfeited too. I mean, why would he wrestle Lezak? Why would he wrestle those guys? Just forfeit, because he'd keep his seed, you know, higher than it would have been if he lost. So people will figure this out quickly, and it'll go downhill. So I personally think at the conference, at a minimum, every contested match is a win or a loss in a head-to-head. I just don't understand how you can be so hurt that you can't compete, and then 10 days later, you're all good and you're ready to hold the seat. So I think if you do that and it's across the board and everybody understands it, that you're going to see a lot less medical forfeits. And the guys at medical forfeit, hey, if they're that banged up and they're willing to take losses and chances of the Nationals, I think that's okay.
Take that just even at the team level. If you said, hey, we're having the conference basketball tournament and Iowa doesn't want another loss, they say, we're in the tournament, but we're going to forfeit against Illinois. It'd be groundbreaking if that happened.
It makes no sense. And no other sport does this. That's what I'm saying. We've done some good things. I don't want to be doom and gloom guy. Wrestling has done some really awesome things, and you can see attendance is up and there's a lot of positives, but like, we continue to shoot ourselves in the foot. Like, if we want things to matter, I mean, one of my takes is, I personally think at the collegiate level, you should go to, there are medical forfeits, but they count as a win and a loss all throughout the season. It would do a couple of things. Number one, you'd see a lot less big tournaments, because if you enter the tournament, now you know, I got to finish it, because if I don't, every guy I forfeit against, that's a head-to-head win over me. So you're going to shrink these tournament fields down, which, by the way, one of the worst parts about our sport is the giant tournament, other than the NCAA championships, where everybody gets, you know, pumped for. You know, look at the attendance that are at a good dual meet versus Cliff Keen Las Vegas Invitational. I mean, it's like night and day. Again, if we're talking about growing the sport and bringing in revenue, those do nothing. The giant tournament does nothing. The great dual meets everything. So it would actually deter. You know, we still have tournaments, but maybe the field would shrink. Maybe it'd be a little bit smaller. Guys would wrestle the matches. I mean, you go to the Midlands and watch medical forfeit after medical forfeit. Now you actually, if you enter the tournament, you got to finish it. So I think that would be, you know, I think that would be a big change. And then we were talking about one of the other things is, if you went away from winning percentage, because then you get a lot of strategic, you know, one of the criteria for seeding and for qualification is winning percentage. If you went away from winning percentage and went to wins, now you encourage guys wrestling. And maybe they do enter a tournament because they want to get wins, but you also have to finish the tournament. And if you don't, you take losses. So you get some pro and con. It balances that, you know, it balances what you're trying to do.
How long before the hands to the face during the tournament is going to make a factor and there's going to be a blow up by a coach?
Man, I don't know. It's been going all year. I mean, honestly, I'm kind of on the opposite side. I will say this. So people don't remember hands to the face. Like, what they're trying to eliminate is the open hand straight punch to the nose. And that got really popular. I mean, one of the ones I can remember, and I like him, I don't have a problem with him, but Mark Perry used to literally open hand palm everyone right to the nose. And you can't wrestle getting punched in the face. So that's what they're trying to deter, with the hands in the face. But then, of course, they can't really write that in, I guess, objectively. So it ends up being, if you touch the guy's face, it's a penalty. And of course, people are up in arms about that, because that's not really the purpose of the rule, is to not be able to touch the guy's face at all. It was really so you're not, you know, like I said, open hand jabbing him in the face to keep him away from you.
So what do you think the solution is there? I mean, you put in a warning and it almost gives somebody a freebie to jack somebody in the face. The way I look at it is, if it's not blatant enough that you like, maybe you take replay out of it. What do you think about that? I mean, if it's not obvious enough that the official doesn't catch it right away.
That really was, that was unfortunate last week with the one with Lee and Rivera. You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the answer. I know what they're trying to get away from, and honestly, I do agree with it. Like, nothing prevents wrestling like a guy just straight, you know, jabbing a guy with his palm in the face. I know I've taken them, and you know, you can't get close to them. They just keep jamming you in the face, and I mean, I'm not sure how that's good for wrestling. So if we don't wrestle at all, we just keep punching each other in the face, like nothing happens. Like, that's not what we want. So they're trying to get away from that, but then now it's introduced this really subjective element. And, you know, wrestling, we've been reluctant to add ways to score points, or at least make it easier to score points. And then this one is so egregiously easy, you know, it's such a huge penalty that it kind of throws the balance off. And I think that's what people are mostly upset about, that, hey, you know, you work your butt off to, you know, guy will be riding you. It's hard to get an escape. They want to do it with riding time. We got all the confusion at the edge of the mat. They won't add a step out point. They want to have this, I don't know, he's stalling, the other guy's stalling, they're both stalling, like all action call, all these different, you know, interpretations at the edge. But then if you just reach out and touch the guy's face, it's a penalty. So I think that's really, I mean, hope that makes sense. I think that's really more the uproar, is that it's so out of line with the rest of the sport that, you know, it's just giving away too many easy points.
Just looking at the brackets here, 125, a name that doesn't probably pop out to a lot of people, but number 19, Zeke Moisey from Nebraska, comes in 13-10, got pinned in the opening round really early of the Big Ten championships. Here's a guy who's a finalist, what, in 2015, pins Thomas Gomez in the semis and then loses to Tomasello. What do we make out of his career? How did he get to this point where he couldn't replicate what he did in that one tournament?
Well, I talk about this every year with people. Wrestling, it gets harder now. It's a different era for college wrestling. Like, first of all, kids are a lot more prepared coming into college with flow wrestling and all the access to training and skills. And it's a lot different than it used to be 20 years ago. So guys are more ready to wrestle, but in that they also have more wear and tear on their body, more mileage on their body. I mean, you only have so many, you know, so many hard goes, you know, so many times you can twist your knee before you, you know, you start breaking down. And I think Zeke's one that, you know, perfect example of that. I mean, it looked like he hurt his shoulder pretty good. His shoulder's popping out maybe at the Big Ten. You know, when they're young, they're new, no one knows you. You know, it's just not so much scouting, but a sense of how you wrestle. And he burst on the scene, had a few good wins. He obviously could do some things. And over the course of your career, it gets harder. I mean, look at all the guys. Look at Isaiah Martinez, all the guys that they thought would never lose again. I mean, Slater, you know, we could go on and on. Spencer Lee, I mean, he wins last year and everybody's like, oh, he'll never lose again. I mean, obviously it hasn't happened. It's just going to get harder. It's not going to get easier next year for him. You know, they figure out how you wrestle. You're the top guy. So, you know, Moisey, I think it's a combination of wear and tear on his body, injuries, and said it gets harder over the course of your career, because these young guys coming in are not like true freshman when I came in, where, you know, I hadn't seen a college match until I was a junior in high school. I mean, these kids have been watching college matches and watching flow wrestling and, you know, understanding what it takes to be successful to, you know, at that level since they've been 10. And so they come in, they're pumped and they're ready. And you can just get a lot of young kids coming in that are ready to compete at that level. So as a sophomore, junior, senior, it's not any easier, because now people know you and you just have more, you know, more miles on your body. And it just makes it that much harder to win.
Adam, you talk about Spencer Lee, and, you know, let's bring up Vincenzo Joseph and Gable Steveson and all the guys that took a loss in the conference tournaments this weekend. And you mentioned earlier that you had lost in the conference finals. I think it was like 9-5 or something to Jared Lawrence in your senior year there. And you turn it around 10 days later at the NCAA championships and win 6-0. How do you reverse that mentally?
Well, I think you have to be realistic about, you know, your performance at the, you know, for those guys at the Big Ten, you know, assess how you wrestled. And yeah, again, styles make fights. I mean, if you got beat by somebody, you have to figure out if, you know, you really wrestled your best strategy, your best positions, or if, you know, if they're actually just better than you, or if you didn't, you know, you didn't do the things that that it takes to win at this level. I mean, everybody's good at Division I level. Everybody can wrestle in certain positions. There's almost nobody, even the greats, you know, even Nolf and Nickel, I mean, they still put themselves in the positions they're comfortable with. You can't just go, you know, anything at any time with anybody. And that's how you get beat. So, I mean, I thought Lee and Rivera, Rivera's a tough matchup for him. I thought Stevenson wrestled a very unintelligent match. And I bet he was kicking himself after that because it looked like he just kind of thought, like, okay, Kassar's really strong. You don't want to wrestle. I'll just take you down one time and I'll beat you. And almost like overconfident, you know. And hey, listen, you got to be cocky. You got to be confident to win at this level. But I would bet that he went back in the tunnel and was punching himself after that match because I think he's a better wrestler. And he just again, poor strategy. You know, poor strategy, not enough respect to your opponent, and kind of gave that one away. So I think his is one he can turn around. Vincenzo probably has to make an adjustment against Marinelli. I mean, most of the things he can do against other people, Marinelli, you know, a little bit more physical, harder time with the upper body, with the overhook inside trip. And he probably will make some adjustments, but I see those guys as pretty even, and I think Lee can beat Rivera. But again, you're talking, you know, very, very close, you know, very, very close margins. And I'm sure, you know, Brands will try to make some adjustments there.
Do you think Piccinini has a gripe to not get the number one seed? He's number two. Do you think he has a case that he should be number one?
Sure. I mean, the way they're doing it, when part of it is a coach's rank, and I mean, coach's rank starts basically off of last year, right? I mean, you're not starting from scratch. I mean, this is kind of the argument with, you know, not to switch sports, but college football. I mean, if you don't start ranked in the top 10, what are the chances you're going to be in the top four at the end of the year? I mean, it's hard to do. So coach's rank starts with basically the previous year, but everything else is based on this year. Well, you know, Rivera starts ranked higher, and then, you know, he can't flip it for one reason or another because Rivera beats Lee, and then he beats Lee, but he hasn't beat Rivera, and Rivera beat him first. So yeah, I think there's an argument there. I think, I don't think that's a weight where they're super concerned. I mean, obviously you're going to have to beat, you know, one, two really good guys to get to the finals, but I think he has an argument.
174 pounds is interesting because you really do have three guys that have separated themselves to a certain degree. Mark Hall is the number one seed, Daniel Lewis, number two, and Zahid Valencia, number three. Daniel Lewis, here's a guy that pins Valencia during the season. What do you think? Do you think he can be an NCAA champion this year?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Lewis is you know, like I said, perfect example of he's got to get guys to wrestle the way he wants to wrestle, where he's comfortable. Obviously, he's a great mat wrestler. Needs to turn it into a mat match where, you know, he's good on his feet, good defense, maybe can get a takedown, but, you know, chances of him beating Valencia in a match that lasts, you know, 5 minutes on their feet is probably not good. But obviously he's, you know, he beat him once and he's got a great cradle on top. He's a heck of a rider. He's probably one of the leading guys in the country in riding time. You know, always on top of guys and he could beat Hall too. There's no question. I think those guys are very similar, but yeah, Lewis is, that's not a fluke. I mean, he lost to, I mean, people forget last year, he lost in the last seconds to Joseph. And I want to say that was the quarterfinals. And then Joseph went on and beat Martinez in the finals.
Miles Martin at 184. He won as a freshman second last year. Now he has a chance to get another NCAA championship in his final season. What do you think with him? Do you think he's a lock to at least get to the finals?
Yeah. I mean, I think Martin's one of the guys that has actually separated himself a little bit over the course of his career. Looks like a kid that works really hard on his technical skills and continuing to add to his arsenal. I mean, he's always obviously been a good athlete and, you know, he's NCAA's a champ as a freshman. So that sounds crazy. Like, oh, you're NCAA champ as a freshman. And, you know, like you've gotten better since then because he's back there, back in that position as a senior. But like I said, it gets harder. I mean, it's not easier. The matches get closer and he's actually been one to distance himself from the competition. And I think it looks like, again, a guy that really works hard on his game, on his craft, and adding to his arsenal and trying to score and coming up with different ways. So I'd be surprised if he's not in the finals. And I'd be surprised if he's not the champ just by the way he's wrestled this year. I mean, crazier things have happened, but he would be in my next group after, you know, Nickel and Nolf.
Adam, have you ever seen anybody more dangerous in college wrestling than Bo Nickel?
I don't think so. He's like a different version of Ben Askren. It's really odd. He's good in so many positions, but also very, very solid. So great, can have great defense, you know, great stance, great leg attacks, all the basic skills. But then if you think you're going to, you know, if you think you're going to trick him with going upper body, it's like, I don't think I've seen him lose an upper body position since he's been in college, except for that first year with Martin. And that's how he got beat in the finals.
With that in mind, so, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. No, I mean, he's pretty unique. I mean, Bo can pretty much do it all.
With that in mind, as a coach, and Colin Moore's got a lot of high-powered offense, but yet, you know, you don't want to make it a free-for-all either. You wind up staring at the lights. How do you deal with that if you're trying to get Colin Moore ready to face him a third time?
I mean, I think anybody who, whenever you're wrestling a guy that's obviously better than you, and if you just wrestle them straight up, you're probably going to get beat and get beat pretty good. I mean, I think a lot of it is, you know, just trying to make the match close. You know, you got to shorten the match. You got to, you know, try to tie them up, tie up their hands, obviously not give away easy points, but try to keep the match as close as possible, as long as possible, because that puts more pressure on the guy that's supposed to win. I mean, does it work out very often? No. I mean, you're not going to be a lot of guys that are a lot better than you, but that's your chance. I mean, I don't see him going out and, you know, going fireman's right away and trying to get him to his back being a good strategy, but I'll leave that to Ohio State there. that's their thing, not mine. But if it was my guy, I think closer, longer is the strategy. Try to get into the second period 0-0 or down 2-1 and just try to keep it close. And hey, things can happen.
Iowa State is such a compelling storyline, and Andy and I have talked about this throughout our On the Mat show, is that here's a team that has overachieved, takes Iowa to 1 point in a dual meet, loses to Missouri and you and I in duels, but then has a nice tournament at the Big 12s, gets second place, and really outdistances you and I at the Big 12 championships. But when you look at the NCAA championships, you just don't know where their power is going to come from. Where do you see Iowa State fitting in the mix if you had to say, hey, this is where I think they're going to finish?
Yeah, I think they're still a year away. And I think, in fairness, I think, you know, Dresser won't say that on the record because obviously he wants to show belief in his guys. And but they're overachieving right now. You know, I think they're still a year away from really, you know, having a good team performance. I don't know where it's going to put them. You know, maybe they're a top 10 team this year if they wrestle well. I mean, I think, you know, guys like Gomez have a shot at placing, although that's a great weight. You know, Miklas has been pretty good for him this year. But everybody else is close. I mean, they're bubble guys with a good performance. I mean, Deegan's the 8th seed. You know, they could have 3 All-Americans, but they could have 0 too. I mean, there's definitely a chance for that. And it's not because they're not doing the right things. I mean, they've had a heck of a turnaround. I said when he got the job there that they were going to be great. And just after, you know, just in this year and their second year, you can see the difference. So I can't wait for that rivalry to pick up with Iowa again. I think that'll be awesome for wrestling.
How about your weight class, 149? What do you think coming out of that one?
I like the way Ashland's wrestled all year. You know, Jordan's really good. He's great on his feet. He just, and obviously he's had a great season, but he's a little bit more limited in the other positions than some of the other guys. And I think that's what's always held him back. He's maybe the best guy in the weight on his feet, but it's a 3-position sport. And, you know, he's gotten better in those areas, but that's where Ashland's beat him. You know, Kolodziej keeps every match close. You know, I like G. Feller, Oklahoma State, and I think he's really gotten better. He's had some good results. I haven't seen the kid from Missouri, in fairness, at all. Fine Silver, I haven't seen this year that much. But I think Ashland's definitely the guy to beat.
Does the name on your singlet when you get to the big show matter? Just meaning when you're Campbell going against a Big Ten guy, does that play with your head at all?
Well, let's see. So we kind of had a little bit. I mean, I was a Big Ten guy, but obviously we weren't, you know, we weren't the elite programs at the time, the Minnesota, the Iowa. I think it helps. I mean, I think it helps those programs when you're, you know, especially, I mean, you can see the momentum from the last few years, like with Penn State, and when other guys are doing well, it does help you. I know it's subconscious and it's an individual sport, but it does help you. And I've seen other times where, you know, teams just start falling over and over, and there's no other reason for it than, hey, you know, the team's not doing well. And I don't always think it's a training thing. I don't think every guy is unprepared. It is a team sport. There is momentum to it. I don't think anybody from Campbell or Duke or, you know, any other teams are really intimidated. But it does help to be there with a group and a group with a purpose and other guys that are doing well. I think that does help you. So that's why it's that much more impressive when guys can come from, you know, from a smaller program and basically, you know, beat the odds and beat the teams with, you know, with 5, 6, 7, 8 guys there.
I don't see a path for a team other than Penn State to win this. Do you see any possible way that Penn State does not get first?
Yeah, I think unless their bus breaks down and they don't get there, they're pretty far ahead. I mean, I think it would take at least two guys, like two of their bigger scoring guys, to not just lose, but like lose and get not placed or get seventh or eighth, because you just get too many points for third or fourth. So even if they got upset, you still come back and get third or fourth. They just have too many guys. I don't think this year is going to be a great year for the team race. I think next year that'll set up pretty nicely with, you know, quite a few teams in the mix.
The bus thing, that's not even going to work this year with it being in Pittsburgh. They're going to find a way to the arena.
Exactly. They're probably just jogging over there, yeah. Run and still make it and still could win.
Yeah, you got to think that they know some car dealer that can rent them a van and get them over there whenever it breaks down.
So
they're going to get there.
I mean, I hate to say, like I don't want anybody to get injured. I mean, it would really probably take, you know, like I said, two really freak things and not just one. I mean, they could probably get rid of all of Mark Hall's points or Bo Nichols points or Knowles points and still be just fine.
Missouri is always a team that looks good when they come in, but they just can't quite get a trophy consistently. Can they get a trophy this year?
I don't know that they have enough. Missouri's done a great job with their program, but I think they've had better teams than this year. I don't see this being the year that they're going to be a top five team. I mean, I hope they prove me wrong. But again, a lot like Iowa State, better than Iowa State, but a lot of bubble guys. I mean, you need top end guys. You got to have top four guys to, you know, to be a top five team. And because you're just not going to win with, you know, a couple sevenths and eighths and guys squeaking in or winning matches, because all the points come from placing. You got to have all Americans, and the big points come from obviously first, second, third, fourth.
When we look at this, we're saying Penn State is likely going to win it, but there's three other trophy spots. Is it pretty much going to be one of four teams, Iowa, Oklahoma State, Michigan, Ohio State, for those remaining three trophies?
Yeah, I think so. You know, Minnesota had a pretty good tournament at the Big Ten, but you got to take the other grain of salt a little bit because it was at their place, which always makes you do a little bit better. Yeah, I mean, outside looking in, you know, you got Lehigh and Cornell, I would say would be teams that are sort of on the bubble. But yeah, I mean, other than that, it's probably Penn State, Ohio State, Iowa, and who was the other one?
Oklahoma State, Michigan in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Michigan, yeah.
How about Yanni here at going again for his second championship? He's a sophomore coming in. He's just as good as they get, entertaining, has a great style for the fans and just brings a lot of energy. McKenna's good, but I don't know that he can beat Yanni going to the finals.
Yeah, Yanni's got a really great feel. I mean, he said he kind of reminds me a little bit of Dake, you know, just great feel for the sport. Obviously all these guys are really good at this level, but just a great knack for said a great natural feel for what's going on. I mean, they all have good attacks and stuff. McKenna's really tough. I mean, he separated himself pretty good. Obviously Lee's given him a couple of good matches. McKenna came out on top last time. I think that one could be interesting again. Yanni's pretty solid. I mean, I would say biggest threat to Yanni is a guy like Ironman that really can, I mean, is Yanni better? Yeah, he's a better wrestler, but Ironman really can get you on your back and pin you at pretty much any time. Not that he will, but he could.
Adam, from a fan standpoint, and you look beyond the, you know, we've talked a lot about elite guys so far, but after them, from a fan standpoint, who are two or three or four guys that you really appreciate watching, you enjoy watching?
Oh, boy. Well, obviously, being out here, you know, I've watched the Fresno State kids all year. I think that story, and I know I'm biased because that's where we're from, but, man, they're in their second year. I mean, they're a second-year program, and they have five NCAA qualifiers. So it's been a pretty fun thing. And to watch the amount of people that have come, I mean, they beat Wyoming this year and beat Oregon State this year. I mean, two perennially, you know, very solid programs. So I enjoy watching their kids. A couple of them are my personal kids from high school, but just in watching the whole program. Obviously I got my brother at Stanford, so I follow their guys. I'll tell you a guy who I've always liked, and I don't know how you can't like him, is Cade Brock, and he's the 15 seed. But if there's a more entertaining guy that doesn't win all the time than Cade Brock, I'm not sure who it would be. Like, he's always in dynamic, high scoring, great, great technical ability. I mean, just goes balls to the wall the entire time. I think he's really fun to watch. I've always really enjoyed watching Cade Brock wrestle. Off the top of my head, I don't know any others. I really like Desi from Oregon State for a heavyweight, very international type style, but the great pressure, wrestles hard, scores a lot of points at the heavyweight level. And then obviously you got some of your top guys that everybody enjoys watching wrestle. But I would say for guys that are, you know, maybe not top four guys, Desi's a good one. I said Cade Brock's been a favorite of mine since he was, I think, a true freshman when he pinned, who was the Oklahoma kid?
Cody Brewer.
Pinned the Oklahoma kid in the duel.
Yeah, Cody Brewer.
Yeah, national champ. Yep. And like I said, he wrestles that way every time. It's just, he doesn't always win them. Said he just got pinned by Demas in about a minute in the Big 12 finals, but he'll do the same thing next time. He'll be right out getting after him. He's fun to watch.
How about a three-man round robin between Adam, Alex, and Troy Tirapelli?
Oh, boy, I don't think that's very close at this point. Alex is still coaching college, so yeah. And he's bigger than us.
Yeah.
So, I think he's probably got us. And I'm a little bigger than Troy, but he's probably in better shape. He's 8 years younger than me, so I might be the odd man out at this point.
You mentioned Fresno State. Does that thing feel like it's still taking a sharp upward trajectory with what they've got coming in?
Well, it's like anything, right? It's easy to get to a certain level. It's just like, as an individual, I tell our kids, you know, you put in this much work, you can get to the state meet. You put in, you know, a lot more work, you can be a placer. But then every time to move up just a little bit from there takes an exponential amount more work. So they started the program, they won some dual meets, they got five NCAA qualifiers. You can't expect that trajectory to continue. It's not going to be a linear path. They're not going to be a top five team in the country in 3 years. Like, that's not going to happen. And that's where, you know, people always make the mistake that, you know, oh, we're doing well, we'll be top five. Well, who's not going to be in the top five? Which one are you going to beat? Are you going to beat Oklahoma State? Penn State, you know, the print Iowa. I mean, somebody's got to be displaced, and they're quite a bit ahead of everyone else. So I still think it's got, you know, great upward trajectory. They're getting recruits in, but you're not going to see this. I mean, they're not going to have 10 NCAA qualifiers anytime soon. It's not going to be like that. They're not going to have 5 All-Americans. They got to work to get their first All-American, you know, then hopefully multiple All-Americans, then maybe get somebody in the finals at some point and get a champ, which would be, you know, that's sort of the, probably the next steps for them.
Hey, one of the things, and you know, we got a chance to visit when I was out there for a women's freestyle training camp in Fresno, and one of your brilliant ideas, I think, is this experimental rule idea. Can you share that with our audience?
Yeah, which one are you talking about? Just doing it at the beginning of the year?
Yeah, yep, the first month.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you look at these other sports, like baseball, for example, so it doesn't matter if you're a baseball fan or not. They're doing spring training right now. In one of the leagues, for the second half of the games in the league, I believe it's the one in Florida, they're putting in 4 or 5 experimental rules for baseball, and they're playing the games with these rules, whether, you know, it's a new pitcher coming in has to face 3 consecutive batters, no shifting, you know, just whatever they think might impact the sport in a positive way. So every sport does this, except for us, or at least every sport I know. So this is an opportunity. If we want to see how we can continually better the sport, like take a month of the season and make it not count for qualifying, whatever they need to do to make it experimental rules, because everybody could use practice. Everyone wants to get in and start wrestling in November. So maybe the month of November has 3 or 4 experimental rules that we're using, and everybody wrestles, and you get the opportunity to wrestle with these experimental rules, and it doesn't count against you, but it also helps you prepare like a preseason for the actual season. And then we can actually test out, do we need a step out rule, or we try the step out rule as an experimental rule and it just completely backfires and everybody goes, no, we don't want that. We take out riding time. What if we take out riding time? Or what if we make it where to get a riding time point, you need to get a turn. All these rules that I've heard people throw out, this is your opportunity to test them. You know, that first part, you know, month of the season, maybe it's only 2 or 3 weeks of the season, whatever they want it to be. But an experimental period would really, in my mind, would really help out, vet some of these ideas and see if, hey, these things really have merit and could take the sport forward. Or, yeah, it sounded good on paper, but there were unintended consequences we didn't anticipate. So that's not something we're going to be doing. Where the only thing we've ever tried in the past is try it for 1 dual meet at the All-Star match, which it's not enough data. Can't collect enough data, and you can't figure out if it really works or not. So that was my idea. It's not, you know, it's not really my idea. It's just me watching other sports and going, hey, they're doing it. Why don't we try doing something like this so we could actually use real wrestlers getting prepared for a real season, and they would get the opportunity to compete and practice, you know, and get ready for the competitions under a set of rules where we could collect some data.
Does being an NCAA champion, you want to know one, does that still hold weight? Do people still gravitate toward that when they know that you won the big show?
I don't know. It depends who it is. I mean, if it's kids, I mean, they were, you know, weren't even alive when I was born. I mean, our high school kids. So, I mean, I'm nobody to, you know, to anybody who's youngish. I mean, it's all about, you know, the current stars, which it should be. That's great. And it should be about the current stars. They should be wanting to get, you know, Bo Nichols' autograph, you know, not somebody from 20, 30 years ago. But yeah, I mean, people who know the sport, of course, they respect it. I mean, I respect people that won the NCAAs in the 70s. I mean, it doesn't mean you're still a great wrestler, you're still in great shape, but we all kind of have a common bond, and really it doesn't, you don't have to be an NCAA champ. I mean, anybody who wrestled at that level, we all have respect for each other. Just because I won and somebody else didn't doesn't make them any lesser. It just, we all know what it takes to compete at that level and, you know, to be able to win at that level, what it takes. And so I think there's, you know, people who've been around a long time and understand, I think there's a common bond there. So that's probably more the, you know, more the big deal aspect than, than, you know, having people say, oh, look who that is. He won the NCAAs. I mean, they're more interested in the current stars, which is good.
I agree, but still, you got it done. There's something about saying NCAA champion Adam Tirapelli. That's a pretty cool thing to have to your name.
No, it's great. It's awesome. I mean, I don't think my life trajectory would be significantly different if I, you know, would have lost that match in the finals again. But it's nice to say you accomplished a goal and, you know, and got to experience that. I know there's a lot of guys that put in the same amount of work I did that didn't. I mean, my brothers come to mind. I mean, they had some injuries and things, and that's part of life. That's why it's so hard to win, because it's not just about effort and, you know, and training. And, you know, I know we have this common theme in wrestling that if you work hard enough, you'll get anything. And I mean, don't get me wrong. It's nice to think, but it's not entirely factual. And there are things that are out of your control. I mean, staying healthy is a big part of being successful at Division I level. And that's not always in your control. I mean, you know, you can train hard, you can do everything right. But if you tear your knee on some freak thing, you tear your knee. If you're out for 6 months, everybody else is training while you're out for 6 months. And it doesn't mean that you didn't want to train. It just is what it is. And it's hard to get back from that type of stuff.
Adam, if you have the keys to the kingdom and you're looking at how to make duels more important, because you made that comment about how great duels are earlier in the show, what are you doing? What are you doing to emphasize dual meets more?
Oh, boy. I don't know that we can emphasize them any more than we already are. I mean, I think from a like marketing standpoint, I think duels are huge. I mean, you can just look around the country and look at what the attendance is like at duels versus, you know, what I said compared to individual tournaments. I mean, it's night and day. You have 30 teams at a tournament, and there's moms and dads at best in the stands. And you do a dual meet with the Oklahoma State Iowa dual meet was unbelievable. It was absolutely unbelievable. And I know those are two marquee programs, but there's been some great dual meets with teams that aren't top five as well. Just great, you know, UNI has a great atmosphere. You know, Fresno State's put a lot of people in the stands for where their program's at. So I think there's, you know, the dual thing is growing. I mean, I keep saying, I think in my lifetime, the sport will go to duels determining the team title. I just think it will. Because here's my thought. So this is my theory on this. We've outgrown the NCAA tournament. It's sold out every year. It can't get any bigger. Like, I hope that we're not going to put it in like a giant Lucas Oil stadium like the Indianapolis Colts and, you know, fill 100,000 seats and you can't see the guys are like tiny ants down there. I hope that's not the direction we're going to go. But the NCAA tournament is as big as it can get. It's popular. It's sold out. They raise the prices every year and people continue to buy the tickets. So the next level of growth has to come from making the season competitions more meaningful. And they are now for individual qualification, which is good. But you can see how many guys sit out here and there because the duel really doesn't, you know, the duel really doesn't ultimately matter. I mean, it matters, but it doesn't ultimately matter. So I think if we go toward it someday, I think duels will determine the team champion. And I think that'll get the same, you know, it's not going to be college football, but that's why college football is so popular, because every game matters toward their team being able to be a conference champion or get in that national championship game. And I think that's where we have to go. If we want to keep growing it, we got to grow at the places where it can grow, you know, pack the stands for every Iowa dual meet, not just the one versus Oklahoma State, because if their team, you know, if their team falls short against one team, that can impact them for the ability to win a national championship. And maybe it's some combined element where it's duels and individual tournament, but I just think all the growth is going to come from duels at the Division I level. I mean, there's just no more room for growth at the national tournament.
Adam, thanks for this time. We appreciate having you on the program. Are we going to see you at Nationals? Did you get tickets?
So I didn't, and that's one of the reasons. That's kind of my point, is that so this is the first time I think in 10 years we're not going. My group's not going because we just struggled to get tickets so bad, and I even have family in it, and obviously I know people, and I probably could have called on big favorites if I needed to, but the tickets were so scarce. We just said, you know what, let's just, you know, my wife got to do something this year. We said, let's pass, watch it on TV. And we obviously have all mats all the time. It's not the same as being there, but that's kind of one of my points for, hey, when people want to get tickets and they're willing to pay to get tickets and it's still hard to get them, like, you've outgrown that. What else can we do to grow it? So we'll be watching it though. We've already, both me and my business partner, we've already scheduled off 2 days of work. We'll be watching it in the morning and in the evening and working in between.
Hey, let's try to get it to Clovis, California. What do you think?
They'll never bring it west. The Midwest people and East Coast people don't travel. You know how it is. When it's in Iowa, like every Iowa person shows up. And if it just moves like two states over, it's like, it's too far.
Adam, we got snow coming down right now outside my living room here. We would welcome the tournament out there in sunny Southern California.
I know. I always think, like, man, if they had it in San Diego, like, I would think a lot of people would want to travel and it would be a great experience. But I just don't think, you know, it's so popular now, you know, obviously in that area from, you know, Midwest over to East Coast, that they just don't want to chance it because they don't want to give up their revenue if people don't come.
We appreciate this. Thanks for the breakdown. We love having you on. I guarantee it won't be the last time. We'll be checking in with you soon.
Yeah, thanks, you guys. It was fun.
That was a lot of fun with Adam Terrapelli, assistant wrestling coach at Clovis High School and three-time All-American. Incremental growth, man. Third, second, first as a senior. He has a lot of great insight and really appreciated his breakdown. He covered a lot of topics that we've wanted to discuss, but he articulated in such a good way. I really liked his insight.
Awesome. Absolutely awesome. Nah, that goes back to the first time I interviewed him. Like, this guy has a pretty unique insight into the sport and a lot of fun to talk to.
Hope you will be at the NCAA championships if you are listening. Hopefully you got tickets, but if not, Andy Hamilton will guide your journey all the way. Track Wrestling, just break it down. They can go to your website. They can follow you on Twitter. I don't know how much as far as updates they'll get on Facebook, but those always seem to be the good ones. The website, Twitter, get some updates there. And I think I saw the package you can already order to order all of the NCAA championship matches after the finals. $39.99, did I see?
I think you're correct there. Hey,
I'd buy it.
How about a little plug for On the Mat next week?
On the Mat next week will be in Pittsburgh. That's going to be fun.
It's going to be one of our favorite shows of the year.
Last year we had a blast. Who all did we have on? I think we had
Teague Moore. We had Chris Bono, Zeke Jones, Troy Steiner.
Was it those four?
I think so.
Yeah, I think we had those four. And we appreciated Shane Sparks going and wrangling those guys up and getting them over there to talk to us. I know we're going to have an edition of Casper's Corner for that particular show. So be listening for that. And we don't know who's going to come on. That's the beauty of it. So it's your surprise show for next week. When we're in Pittsburgh, we're going to be at the arena, have coaches who are available to be on the show. So it will be a fan favorite. It's one of our favorites. So make sure you tune in. Anything from you as we go into Pittsburgh, anything you're looking forward to, just final thoughts as we go into the 2019 championships.
I'm looking forward to the whole week from the drive all the way out there to Pittsburgh with Shane Sparks. Last year we did, like 4 hours of Facebook Live in the car. Actually took a wrong turn, went up through Michigan, added about an hour and a half to our trip because the GPS was leading us away from toll roads, I think. But we made the most of it. We arrived in the middle of a blizzard. And like I said, I think we had a Gable on for an hour.
Nice.
Pumping Gable through on the Bluetooth in the car and letting people ask Gable questions and hear his responses in lifetime, which was really cool. So we're going to try that again. We're going to do some other stuff like that. If we get some good guests lined up for the drive. And then, like you said, next Wednesday, day before the tournament, we'll be recording live from PPG Paints Arena.
The only thing I can guarantee is I don't know that we're going to get a better story than the one Teague Moore gave for us.
No.
And he's from Pittsburgh.
There we go. Cool, let's get him back on.
Yeah, we have to get him back on.
Have to ask him to retell the story.
Yeah. It's worth it because if you haven't heard it, you need to hear it from Teague. Yep. It's such a good story. So we'll make sure we look for Teague Moore on the program. Look for our next edition of On the Mat. Thank you for listening. I'm Kyle Klingman, Andy Hamilton. You've been listening to On the Mat.
show is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.